Aitzquachil, Nautsiam, Nichalachasiam, Tam Sanatsnatsiam, Tam Wixin, Chaklamithan. I greeted you in my native language, Klamichasan, or the language of the Lummi Nation. I said good morning, and greetings to relatives and honored friends. I'm Tam from the Tam Wixin area of the Lummi Nation. So I'd like to present on a collaborative study that we have administered out of the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board. I'm serving as the project director along with our principal investigator, who's out in the crowd there, Jody Lapidus, with a partnership of 6 Northwest tribes in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, along with the University of Washington Harborview Injury Prevention Center, Injury Prevention and Research Center. While I'm here to speak about our qualitative research approach that led to a better understanding of child safety seat use, I thought it would be useful to quickly go over a bit of background about the overall study, so you know how this CBPR partnership emerged, and you know the context of why we used qualitative methods, how they were employed, and how the results were used to used in terms of the development of the interventions. Okay. So this partnership began back in 2003 when among the same 6 tribes we were fortunate to receive funding through the Native American Research Centers of Health Program to conduct an assessment of child safety seat use in these communities. Following this assessment, there was, of course, a heightened awareness of the need for interventions around child safety seat use, and tribes were very engaged, and we made a promise to those tribes that we were working with that we would work towards finding funding to mount interventions in their communities. And after several tries, finally, in 2008, we were awarded funding through the then National Center of Minority Health and Health Disparities to work with these tribes to facilitate interventions and evaluate these interventions in their communities. So the overall design of this study was to design, implement, and test the effectiveness of tribal interventions to improve the use of child safety seats among American Indian children using this CBPR approach. While I've listed all the aims of the studies, I've highlighted the aims that I'm going to talk about in terms of the qualitative research that we've done, and that is to determine the barriers and facilitators that affect consistent and appropriate use of child safety seats, and working with tribes to determine effective methods and appropriate methods to increase child safety seat use through developing community-tailored interventions. I think it's also important to note that in the approach of CBPR, that throughout this whole process in our study, that tribes, this study has been tribally driven. From the initial proposal we did in 2003 to driving us to continue to find funding to do interventions, that through our current funding that we were able to hire tribal staff at each one of the sites to help lead that study locally. In addition, when we did our baseline observation data collection, we hired local research assistants to help collect data. Tribes were involved in the review and analysis of their qualitative data, and then were very engaged and led the design of their community interventions based on the data that they had received through both their quantitative and qualitative data. And then, of course, were the individuals in their communities that led the implementation of the interventions. Okay. Sorry, catch up to myself here. Now, to achieve these aims, it's useful to explain also that the qualitative methods employed were used within a sequential explanatory design, where first the quantitative data was collected first and determined the proportion of child safety seat, of proper child safety seat in the, use in the community, and established what the relative risks were for children that were not that were improperly restrained. And then it was followed by qualitative methods that was intended to help explain that quantitative data that we had collected and elaborate on some of the factors in more detail. So I have two quick slides that I thought I would share in terms of the quantitative findings, just because it helps show how it led to what we explored in the qualitative research. So the first was, as you can see, we collected data in the initial study in 2003, followed by our baseline measures collected in 2009. And while you can see there has been improvement in these communities, between 2000 and 2003 and 2009, there's still quite a lot of room for improvement, especially in the booster seat age children. So those children that were between 4 and 7, only approximately 41% of those children were properly restrained. In terms of the children that we found most at risk for improper use of child safety seats were children that were observed in locations where laws did not meet the current recommendations. Some of the tribes themselves had tribal safety seat laws. And some tribes did not have laws. Others observed state laws. Children of booster seat age were also more at risk. Children riding with non-parents were at more risk. Children riding in trucks and children that were in vehicles where the driver was 5 minutes or less from home. We also asked for those that were not using child safety seats, what was their reason for not using child safety seats? And some of the responses we had from participants was that their seat was in another vehicle, possibly because they were a non-parent driver. They were close to home. They thought that their child was big enough to not be using a child safety seat. They had not planned to take this trip and transport this child. They were in a hurry. There was not enough room for all their children to be safely restrained in child safety seats, or that their child themselves just was not compliant, didn't want to be in the seat, and also that seats had been taken out of the vehicle, they were lost or dirty, and in some cases were actually in the trunk of the car. Okay. So then following this quantitative data collection, we led into the qualitative methods. Site coordinators, we developed a screener so that site coordinators could recruit a purposeful sample of parents and caregivers of children. And by purposeful I meant is that we tried to include parents of booster seat age, of forward-facing seat age, of rear-facing infant seat age, as well as including people in the community that were known to consistently use child safety seats, as well as those that were known to inconsistently use child safety seats. We had both moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas, and we also had a small subset, 2 to 3 people per tribe, that were professionals that had worked closely with families of children 0 to 8. The interviews themselves were semi-structured. It was really just meant to be a conversation, one-on-one conversation, and the intention was that participants would reveal factors relevant to their child safety seat use, and that they would just, you know, kind of relay their story. The questions were all open-ended. While we had these factors that we had determined through the quantitative data collection, we organized them within the interview into the following domains. We talked about general child safety. We talked about norm changes that they had seen in terms of injury prevention in their community and in terms of restraint use, their perception of harm of not using child safety seats, barriers and facilitators that were related to child safety seat use, their family dynamics around restraint use, their decision-making in terms of child safety seat use, cultures and traditions around protecting children. And then we also had an opportunity where participants could tell us what they thought were the best intervention ideas for their community, or how they would best receive media or messages in their community, which was their favorite question. Once the interviews were completed and collected, then they were transcribed, cleaned and formatted using a standard transcription method. And once the transcriptions were the transcriptions were then put into Atlas TEI, where we did a content analysis of that data. When we were coding, we used an inductive approach to coding the transcripts, and we had three main coders that coded the transcripts. And we first started with kind of an open coding, where we had in mind what we thought we would see, and so we had some codes established in the beginning. We used an a priori, and then an invivo codes, where they kind of grew out of the transcripts as we were coding. And then after we had completed the initial five transcripts that we had coded, we got together and established intercoder agreement. And we did that in series of five. So we do five interviews, get together, go through all our codes, establish agreement, go to the next five, and so on until we had completed 15 transcripts. Then we did an axial coding, where we reorganized those codes into themes, which I'll share with you. And then our selective coding, where we selected specific quotes to illustrate those themes. An interpretation of the data. We conveyed the lessons that we'd learned using our axial coding and selective coding. We also derived meanings by looking back at those participant screeners I had talked about earlier in terms of what we were seeing for parents or males, females, users of child safety seats, and inconsistent users of child safety seats. Okay, our results, we had 47 completed among three tribes. We had a initial 66 codes, which is a little scary, but then we established those into actually a much smaller subcodes that we established. I'm not going to go over those because I've got a little time issue here. The six main themes, and then we established six main themes established through our axial coding. I'm going to go through our six main themes. The first was that we had local trips, and so that we found that a lack of consistent use of child safety seat was perceived to be influenced by the locality of the trip, and when their child, in the elicitation interviews, when participants were asked to think about a time when their child hadn't used a child safety seat, they often responded that it was the distance or locality. So it was, oh, it's just a local trip, I'm just going to the store, I was in a hurry. They also mentioned the second theme was around non-parent drivers, and participants mentioned that there was this challenge of their children riding where their parent was not the driver. And while parents felt bad that their kids were affronted with transportation options where they might not have a child safety seat use, it wasn't necessarily stopping them from putting in those situations. The third theme was around driving on and off reservation. And when you first looked at the data, especially if you weren't for a Native community, it may look like it was an issue of kind of a small town issue. But what it was really looking at was individuals' comfort about driving on reservation and driving off. So folks had talked about that their behavior changed, that they felt safe driving around town. It didn't seem as dangerous, but when they went off res, that they would actually put on their seatbelts as they were leaving the physical boundary of the reservation. And also folks had talked about just a different kind of on res, off res culture and comfort level about being on res. The next theme was around community responsibility for children. We expected that people would have specific rules for their own children, In addition, folks talked about rules and behaviors they had for all children in their car, but also folks talked about their responsibility for children in the larger community. And it may even seem like an extended family. So they thought that everyone should watch out for all the children in their community. And when asked how they would feel if they saw another child in their community not using a child safety seat, many participants indicated that they would be worried about that child and they would actively do something or say something to that other parent or driver to see if that child could become restrained. One of the interesting themes that came out of this in both consistent users and non-consistent users was the mention of consistent laws or fines or law enforcement in their community. And that having a law or having a fine that hurt or consistent law enforcement facilitated their use of child safety seats. Or if there wasn't a law, or if there wasn't a fine, or that the police weren't enforcing it, then it wasn't helping them use child safety seats. And when we asked participants about what would be the interventions that they would do in their community to improve child safety seats, even among the inconsistent users, folks spoke about, you gotta have a law, you gotta have a fine that hurts, it's gotta hurt, even though they knew themselves that they were not using child safety seats. They knew that was needed to improve their community's use for themselves as well as they expected that would be for others. And the last theme that we found was around consistent routines using child safety seats every trip, every time. People said every trip, every time. We asked them, for those that were using child safety seats, they talked about the importance of having routines, that applying the child safety seat every time, every trip, regardless of how the child felt or how long they screamed. And participants said that this kind of, you know, as they continued to use child safety seats, just keeping that routine led to less resistance from their children. I want to spend just a minute or so going through how, now that we've collected all this information, both quantitative and qualitative, how that led the main intention to develop these community-tailored interventions. So then we took that data from the tribe, we reviewed all these transcripts together with them, and they, you know, kind of teased out, you know, and provided them with the analysis that we did to think about what were the main issues for each individual tribe. So these are just some examples. It's not obviously inclusive of all the interventions that we did. But you can see some were addressing the non-parent use by holding clinics to have to help grandparents understand what were the correct recommendations for seats and how to put kids in there safely. I'll highlight a couple of the other interventions specifically. One of the things that tribes worked on, because of this overwhelming sense of a need for laws and consistent enforcement, was to create tribal or improve tribal laws. We had two of the three initial tribes participating that created or strengthened their tribal laws, and one of them actually has successfully passed the law through their council, so it's already been ratified. Another tribe that has proposed the law, and we're just kind of waiting for the right opportunity and the climate to push that forward. And in addition to that is coordinating with the police and the justice systems so that it's not just passing a law, it's also making sure there's a consistent system to enforce that, to process fines. And then preparing a media campaign so as that law rolls out, that the community is prepared and informed about this law change. And the other intervention ideas I'd like to highlight was just around the our media campaign. And you can see, I don't know how well you can see the pictures, but many of those themes coming out in our media elements. So here's in number one, you can see everybody's children, the law enforcement in number two, the non-parent drivers in number three. We use both illustrations as well as photographs taken of real community members. So you can see posters about enforcement of laws. Folks created Facebook pages, We used press releases and newspaper ads. We also made these big billboards that were placed in the three communities using local celebrities to enforce their message of, in this particular community, it was around booster seat use. In summary, if I need to exit, just wanted to say that I think this sequential design really led to a better interpretation of the quantitative data that we initially started, and that in addition, the process of the actual data collection with the tribes and being hand in hand to develop the intervention not only provided community voice through the data collection, but assured that the interventions were data driven and were fostered acceptance in the community. People had been hearing this was going to happen, as well as gave many opportunities for the staff that we worked to enhance kind of their career development. Hashka Siam.